And now, here's your host, Dr. Ed Kraft.
And welcome tonight to Magic Mind Radio. Thank God it's Friday. Got a very interesting show lined up for you tonight. But before I get started, I want to let everyone out there know. Someone sent me an email regarding our photo contest. We promised to announce the winner on the 3rd. However, we had one entry. So, we're not going to give it away just yet. Well, rather, we had two, and it wouldn't be fair amongst those two to do that. And besides that, we were nailed with a very happy little virus that liked to attack Norton software and put down Norton antivirus. So, we've had to redo it and actually lost those two, which is our fault and my fault. But what I'd like to do is offer everyone to try again. We will still give away the same DVD, A Year in Hell, and The Haunting at the Dunham House. And just for good measure, those of you out there who are UFO fans, I'm even going to throw in the VHS tape of the actual alien autopsy for those of you who do or do not believe it. If you don't believe it, you'll get a laugh out of it. And if you do believe it, then it's there for you. So, going to make it two prizes instead of one to try and encourage you guys to get out there and give us some real ghost photos. And give you a little more information on our website, www.magicmind, that's magicmind.net, not .com. And I'll be posting all the details either this weekend or next week. Right now, trying to redo things from the chaos, which I do apologize for. But unfortunately, in this age of information, those things do occur, even regardless of security systems. And so be on the lookout out there, folks. There's something out there that's sneaking up on these antivirus software. But anyway, we've got a great guest lined up for you tonight. We have with us Dom Villela. And I hope I said it right, Dom.
Yes, you did.
Okay. And he's actually a certified paranormal investigator, a certified parapsychologist, or he's studying psychology as it relates to parapsychology. He's an EVP technician. He's also team leader for Paranormal Investigations of New York City, which is a non-profit organization non-profit group that actually is the American Ghost Society representative for New York City, whose unified goal is to provide absolute proof of the of paranormal events. So, how are you tonight, Dom?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it's great to have you on.
It's great to be on. Thank you for having me.
I had an opportunity to talk with you a few times briefly prior to doing the show, and your group does a lot of interesting work. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, for starters?
Studying parapsychology on my own probably about 7 years ago. It always piqued my interest, and one day I just woke up one morning and just thought, wow, what an interesting field to get into. And it's been an ongoing, I would say, obsession ever since. And I realized there was no college that was actually giving classes on parapsychology, so I figured if I had to learn this, mostly I would have to do it by my own research, which I did, and I would study any information on parapsychology. And the one person that really sticks out from my studies was Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove, who I think officially holds the only PhD in parapsychology in the United States. From him, I researched everything he ever published. And the more I read from him, the more I guess it expanded into other, other people who are also interested in parapsychology. And like I said, and from then, I would find any avenue of parapsychology to research.
And by any avenue, you mean, I'm assuming you mean OBEs, near-death experience, all that stuff.
Right. I mean,
not just ghost hunting.
Well, partially, I mean, I think it started out more, with the interest of ESP, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, afterlife, and it kind of grew into the paranormal investigation that would include ghost hunting. I think ghost hunting came more out of a way to kind of get out there and do some research. And I figured they're all kind of tied together. And I figured it was good to put a group together and, you know, and actually go out and see if we could find proof that the paranormal actually exists. And in turn, kind of tie that in with all the other parapsychology research that I've been doing.
And your group, does it actually go out and investigate these things?
Yes. Yeah, we average usually typically between, I think, 3 and 4 investigations a month, usually within New York City, sometimes upstate or Long Island, but typically within New York City, which, I mean, New York is notorious for its hauntings and considered the most haunted city in the world. So we have that privilege of being the only paranormal investigation team in New York City, which means that we get kind of kept a little busy at times.
I've got to ask this question because we've had George Lutz on the show. And we got him coming back, I believe, next Thursday. You ever had a chance to go out to Long Island, since that's in your neck of the woods?
Long Island, we actually only have had one investigation so far in Long Island, because most of ours is, like I was saying, typically in New York City. We're planning, this is coming up, I think, on the 14th. It's anybody who lives out in Long Island is aware of the old story of Mary's grave, which is, we're going to go investigate if there was actually, you know, if the story actually was true or not. And we're planning an investigation for that, I think, on the 14th of May.
What, Mary's grave now?
Mary's grave is a story about a woman who supposedly killed her family. And the townspeople hung her from a tree. And supposedly, out in Long Island, and every town tends to say they have Mary's grave.
I started to say, there seems to be a lot of these somebody was hung stories.
Right. And supposedly there's a, not necessarily a grave, but a stone that's underneath this marked tree that's supposedly Mary's grave. Now, we kind of feel it's kind of a story, but everybody in Long Island has heard this story, so we kind of want to, whether we have to debunk it or prove it, we want to kind of find out more information about it.
Well, that brings up a good point. When your group goes out, or you go out, excuse me, do you go out with the attitude that there is something there, or do you take a more scientific approach to it in that
I think
there may or may not be something there,
right,
we're going out to prove or disprove it?
We have, the good thing about our group is there's we're kind of half and half. Like, half of our group is more along the lines of scientific method, and the other half of the group is sort of on feelings. So the good thing about that is, but I think we always go out with the idea of, let's keep an open mind and see what we could witness ourselves. We never go out there thinking that there's truly something paranormal. And majority of investigations turn out to be absolutely not paranormal. You know, I mean, there's, you know, plenty of times where there are noisy pipes or leaky faucets that people mistaken for paranormal.
That happens. I find that with a lot of instances, that when people go out with the attitude that there is something there automatically, just based on a story that one individual tells them without a little background information on the individual, you know, sitting down with them and doing a preliminary interview,
right,
with both the witnesses and that live there, as well as the individuals who live there that have not experienced something, these groups tend to go out there and automatically assume there's something there, and that's what they're going to prove, is that there is something there.
And the funny, the mind is definitely a funny thing, because I think if you go out there expecting something, then your mind will kind of fabricate things automatically. And I think the more people want to believe that there's going to be something there, the more likely you'll have witnesses that something's actually there. I think that you have to go into an investigation kind of as a skeptic, because you can't go in there thinking it's definitely haunted. It's not a professional way really to handle it in the first place. And second off, you're almost dooming yourself I don't think people would take us very seriously if we assumed everything we did was paranormal. And I have a very hard time saying anything we find, even if we do not have an explanation for it, I still have a very hard time labeling anything as paranormal. You know, a lot of my cases are considered still open because I refuse to say, well, that's a definite paranormal. I mean, there's things we have found that we cannot explain. I'll give you an example. There's a music studio in Queens that we investigated last year, and then we went back a second time. While recording EVPs, we picked up the voice, after analyzing it, we picked up a voice of a child crying. Now, this was at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's a music studio. It's in a very industrial area, and there are no houses around, and the building is not connected to another building. And everybody who hears it could clearly, it's not something that you have to enhance. You clearly hear the child crying. And I still, to this day, still have a hard time saying that is definitely paranormal. Although I have no other explanation for it at this point. We know it was a brand new tape, because everybody saw me open it, and we know that there was no other way. There was no animal that could have made that sound, and no one else was in the room that we were recording. So sometimes there are instances that we cannot really explain.
Well, I know from living down here in a busy place, that sometimes you hear sound, you know, you can hear a baby crying echoing off the buildings. So things are so close down here in South Florida. And that may be, you know, three houses down. And you're sitting in the house and you're thinking your next door neighbor or someone's out in the back, and it's just echoing off all this concrete down here.
And I would truly think that, but there's not a house within probably a mile from the studio. It's in an industrial area, so there's no houses. So nobody lives over there. It's just businesses.
And again, that still sends up warning flags to me because, you know, you're looking at big industrial buildings, which are mostly concrete and metal.
Right.
And I wonder if maybe on the other side somewhere there's not a house and the kid wasn't screaming and this poor child was just having a fit and it didn't actually just bounce around.
Well, the funny thing about it, I mean, it's actually there for everybody to hear because on our research page on our website, there's actually the recording of it that we put there. Number one, you could tell the voice is coming from in the room, not outside the room. And number two, if you actually could see where the studio is, there's nothing even that close to it that would probably echo off. And like I said, I'd be the first one, trust me, because I tried doing the same thing you're doing right now.
That's me, devil's advocate first, believer second.
Right. And I did that, and I exhausted everything of trying to figure out if there was any other way that could have happened. And I actually went around the whole area checking to see if there was any way. Now, also, these are double-insulated walls because it's a music studio. So for sound to get into the studio is quite difficult. Now, because it's a music studio, you would think that if the gear was on, you could pick up radio transmissions, but all the gear was off. We actually had the circuit breakers of the studio turned off, and we were working in darkness while we were doing it because we were running infrared, so we wanted to make sure we were in complete darkness.
Now, so, when you say you guys use infrared, do you also use night vision?
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, night vision.
Okay, because I distinguish that as something entirely different.
Well, infrared filming, what we do is our video cameras. We use infrared video cameras, which is technically night vision, but we have like an additional infrared lamps that we use along with it.
So you actually get an infrared. I think of the old-fashioned infrared. When I think of infrared, that picks up just the heat signature, where you see the red body or the white body walking around, not the green images.
So you're right. In a way, so it's technically night vision.
Okay.
But they're labeled as, I think, infrared at this point, because I think it's just I think the phrasing has just changed, but it's still considered kind of the same thing.
So I'll be honest with you. I've always had my doubts as to whether or not these new night vision glasses, these green things, pick up as much heat as, or as sensitive to heat as the old-fashioned ones.
Because
you can actually see the old-fashioned stuff.
I agree with you 100%. And I do. I'm not really all that fond of the night vision gear. I mean, through the video cameras,
they're a necessity almost, a necessary evil. Is that safe to say?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Is it not safe to say that they're almost a necessary evil?
Technically, yeah. I mean, for different reasons. You always want to have a video, video documentation of any investigation. So the thing is, though, you don't want, especially in an old music studio, this is why we did this, the wiring was probably fairly bad in the studio. You don't want to take the chance of picking up bad signals from faulty wiring. So you turn the circuit breakers off so you're dealing with a clean environment. Or else, if you're running EMF readings, they're going to be extremely high if the power's on because of all the music here in the studio. It's kind of the only way to guarantee you have no other electric signal in the building. And for that reason, this is why you have to kind of use the night vision, or else you're not going to really pick up anything on the video. We analyzed the video. We didn't really pick up anything on the video. I mean, it was only on the cassette recording that we actually picked up this child's voice.
Hmm.
On the video recording that was videotaping in the same room, we did not pick up the voice, which is weird. But the odd thing about it is, I've done research into it, and it seems like cassette typically picks up more usually than even digital. So I think that's part of the reason why. I just think a cassette is a little bit more sensitive.
As far as the EVPs?
As maybe picking up.
I've actually heard that a lot from a lot of my guests that it seems to work better.
It's that cassettes have a wider, I guess, spectrum of frequencies that they're able to record over a digital source. Like a CD doesn't have as much of that spectrum. So I think that maybe lower frequencies or just specific frequencies, cassettes can pick up better. I've been a recording engineer also I worked in a music, that actual music studio I worked in, that's one of the reasons we were actually there. I was actually the manager of that studio for 9 years. So my background a lot is of, and audio engineering. That's another reason why I got into really EVPs, was I already had that background. And so then I figured I could study that, and I already kind of knew how to analyze audio to begin with. So
you were able to, you had the foreknowledge of how to analyze
exactly.
It.
I mean, and also, the gear to actually analyze, any type of audio.
I've heard that from a lot of people that when it comes to, and I'm curious as to your opinion on this,
okay.
Is that these video recorders that they've got now, even though they're digital, a lot of them, and a lot of investigators prefer digital now over the old-fashioned ones. And I guess I'm just getting older because I stick with the old school as far
right.
as that goes, But it seems to me that more and more of the guests I talk with have had that problem. They can't pick it up on a video recording, but they can pick it up on a audio recording.
Yeah, analog tends to be the way to go when you're even doing video, except the problem is I'm not even sure if they make truly analog video recorders anymore. I think most of them, or 99% of them, are digital recording anyway.
That's one of the reasons I still use the old-fashioned VHS.
Right. And I think that's probably the safe way to go, I guess, if you want to pick up audio frequency. But the truth is, when it comes to videos, the video quality, nothing beats a digital source. So, but for audio quality, that's where the catch-22 is, because that for video, the digital is going to be better, but for audio, analog is better. So you kind of that's why we do both. We have digital film that we're using, but we're using an analog recording. Actually, and we typically have more than one analog recording going on in a room, because we usually have two cassettes usually running. And that was one day we only had one cassette running in there and one videotape running in there. The videotape picked up nothing, but the cassette did.
I've actually heard that a lot, but I've actually had a guest on not too long ago, I believe it was last week, and we were talking about how they'd actually picked up one on both. And that, to me, seems very rare.
It usually is. I mean, there's some instances where we actually, because sometimes we'll do mini disc recording, too, for audio, and we'll use cassette, and we'll pick up the same, noises you'll pick up, or... I mean, there was another investigation we did in upstate where it sounds like an almost like a German man kind of yelling at us we can't make out exactly what he's saying, so it's really difficult to say, oh, it's definitely a voice. It's still, you know, that's kind of still being kind of analyzed. But that one kind of showed up on everything. It did show up on the mini-disc.
Well, Dom, we got to go ahead and take a break.
Sure.
And what we'll do is we'll be right back here on Magic Mind Radio with Dom Vallela. And I want to encourage you to join us in our chat room at www.magicmind.net. And just click on the chat link, and we'll be taking your questions via the chat room tonight. And we're back here on Magic Mind Radio. I'm Dr. Ed Kraft. Our guest tonight is Dom Vallela with the Paranormal Society of New York City, our Paranormal Investigations of New York City. And we've been having an interesting discussion. I apologize for my delay in getting back on, because we actually continued during the break. Well, Dom, when we left, we were actually talking about the validity of the science itself of the paranormal.
Okay.
You yourself are becoming a psychologist. You're a regular psychologist, and you're studying in that field.
Yeah.
And we were discussing how that is considered a liberal art or a social science in most universities and colleges. It's not necessarily recognized as a hard science. The reason that psychiatrists are recognized as a hard science is because of their actual medical training.
Yeah.
From that end of it, and that end of it alone. But they're accepted in the general public as science. It's considered a science. Most psychologists are recognized as scientific professionals by the general public. Not necessarily by the universities, but by the general public. Why do you think that parapsychology isn't, because it is the unknown, isn't at least taken as seriously?
Well, I mean, you have to remember that right off the bat, though, psychology, even though, I mean, psychology, if you had to compare psychology to parapsychology, what they both have in common is, I guess they're very hard to prove through scientific means exactly. I mean, you would have to do the same thing with psychology, is you have to take, you know, hundreds of people and figure out if they all do the same thing and it fits a certain category. And parapsychology, kind of the same thing. If you have hundreds of people and they all have the same type of experience, it could fit into a certain type of category. I don't think that people really necessarily think that psychologists, because most psychologists, they realize, are either counselors or clinical psychologists. I don't necessarily think people really think of them as, I mean, nobody thinks of a psychologist as like a doctor, even if they have their PhD.
I don't know. I've met a lot of people who go to them and treat it as if they're a doctor.
Well, I mean, I guess if they hold a PhD.
And believe me, they collect a paycheck that's just about the equivalent in some cases.
I mean, I feel like it's more of a, I mean, from my experience, between, like, when I think of a psychologist, or when I think of a psychologist, I mean, my biggest difference exactly is that a psychiatrist has, you know, a medical degree and can prescribe medication, where a psychologist can't. there's your biggest difference between the two. Now with parapsychology is, I mean, technically the study of the unknown, along the lines of psychology. So it's still, I mean, psychology is a study of the mind. And so if you can't explain the mind in a way, it's parapsychology in a way, or the unknown, the unusual.
Well, doesn't parapsychology, when you break it down, you say it has to do, psychology has to do with explaining the mind.
Right.
Doesn't parapsychology have to do with the same thing, because we're just taking that to a level beyond what we consider as reality, or we consider is living?
Exactly. I do. I mean, it's more of a, parapsychology, I think, is more based on consciousness studies, where psychology barely touches on consciousness studies. I think there's your difference more than anything. The difference is, with psychology, you can prove things, and with parapsychology, it's very hard to prove anything. That's why it's a parapsychology rather than psychology. I mean, I hope one day it's accepted. I hope one day, you know, parapsychology becomes a true part of psychology. Most psychologists I meet who have any experience in parapsychology, I mean, they do believe in parapsychology. And where I think years ago, where I think people were more likely, I mean, whether it be a psychologist, a psychiatrist, would be more likely to think that someone who believed in paranormal was probably crazy. I think now they're a little bit more accepting of it. I think that it's definitely have come to the point where I don't think paranormal is so unusual anymore. I think there's more people accepting that there actually is something going on that we can't explain.
That makes sense. Now, your group, you yourself, have gotten into these investigations.
Yeah.
But you deal with things like OBEs, and we discussed that a lot last night with Ginger Stewart. What about these near-death experiences and these spirit... Not so much that, but these spirit contacts. Have you encountered... Is that what you mean by the actual investigations?
Well, technically, in several ways. I'll start with near-death first. Near-death is, I mean, I'm sure everybody knows what a near-death experience is. If someone's close to death, people typically report similar experiences, as in most people will say that they were drawn towards a bright light, or they saw people that they knew that had passed away, loved ones, and they were drawn towards them, but they were told to go back. And I'd say about 90% of people who are interviewed about near-death experience agree on that white light. So to a certain degree, it could be something that's just a neuron in a brain that happens when you're about to die or when you're close to death. That could be that bright light. But it doesn't really explain, or some people would say it would be a hallucination, that they would see loved ones because that's what they would want to see. But it just seems very... odd that so many people have such similar experiences, that there kind of has to be something to it. And that's another thing. I would think that that's something that has to be studied on a much, I guess, broader level to really find out. But again, I think psychiatrists and psychologists would explain that away in a completely different way.
And I agree with that. I don't. Well, again, there's no. This is something. Parapsychology is something that is unexplainable. But in the same sense, isn't psychology unexplainable?
Yeah, that's how I feel too. I kind of feel like it's you know, if it's not a brother to psychology, it's sure a first cousin. It's that close. I mean,
how much do we really know about the human mind?
Exactly. And the thing about it, what's good for one person is not good for another person. So just because you could, you know, you have ways of analyzing people, it doesn't mean all people are exactly the same either. Which means that in parapsychology, it doesn't mean that every single, you know, anything paranormal is not going to be exactly the same either. I mean, if people's personalities are that different in general, then how would we possibly have the same experiences if they were paranormal? But the odd thing about it is people will record the same type of instances. Well, especially with near-death experiences, with out-of-body experiences, with spirit contact. And spirit contact to me there's several ways we look at spirit contact. One is kind of that contact that somebody in a near-death experience would make with a departed, you know, loved one or friend. Another one would be in an out-of-body experience, because some people also report seeing loved ones in an out-of-body experience. And the other spirit contact would be trying to make contact with a spirit, if it were possible, on an investigation, which I gotta say we never have. Not direct contact, that, you know, we will ask questions to see if we have any responses on tape. Getting back to that, the child crying, it happened to be after I had actually asked, "Would you like us to help you?" that the child cried. So that was the real odd thing about that recording.
Really? Well, I had an opportunity to talk with Tom and Lisa Butler with AEVP.
Okay.
And, of course, they're coming back on in the next month. Not this month, but I believe it's next month.
Okay.
And they seem to... One of the things that they bring up the most is that it's very important before you even consider it an actual EVP, that it be a response to a specific question. Without the response to that question, it could be background noise. It could be interference. What's your take on that?
I agree. I mean, I think that you're better chance. I mean, if you really are trying to communicate with a spirit, and if there is actual communication, I would think that if they were trying to communicate with you, they would probably, you know, answer a question or attempt to answer a question if you ask one. I think your chances are greatly improved rather than just leaving a cassette recorder in a room and hope for the best. What you typically pick up when you leave a recorder in a room and hope for the best is usually a bunch of odd noises that, you know, could be buildings settling.
Now, when you say just leaving a recorder in a room, I'm going to get back to this one because this experiment was given to me by those same individuals. I haven't been able to try it yet, just because of lack of time to do it.
Okay.
Either take a plastic container, put your recording device down in it, and then either bury it just below the ground, or better yet, take that same device and stick it in an unplugged microwave, because it's an insulated box.
Right.
It doesn't pick up sound, outside sounds or anything like that, and see what you get.
You'll probably still get noise.
You know, somehow I believe you will.
I believe that. I mean, no matter what, I think you always get noise. And I mean, that's why I can't. I mean, there's a lot of recordings. There's a lot of things going on in the recordings. And you kind of have to siphon through all of that because you can't prove a noise as being paranormal. And unless I actually hear speech, I don't even bother going any further unless I hear speech.
Well, now, Dom, somebody's asking, is that noise residual activity or background noise that you get when you do that? You say you probably get noise. Do you think it's residual activity or?
I think it's background. I think it's just general background noise. I just think it's, if you're picking up any type of noise from your recording, it's not a voice. Excluding voice, it's usually just natural sounds that happen within a building. Or that's why, I mean, we try to avoid doing EVPs outdoors.
Well, I think some kind of residual noise is probably indicative of a different type of haunting.
Exactly.
And I do believe that can occur, but it's definitely a direct EVP if you ask the question and receive a direct response. Because that shows intelligence, it shows someone, actual communication.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can't really, if you hear knocks or bangs, they're not proof of anything. And you can't say whether that's residual or not. A vocal response, if it's answering your question, then it's kind of, it wouldn't be residual. You're right. It would have to be a spirit. A haunting, a residual haunting, something like that, would be something reoccurring that would have to be, it's more like a recording on time. It's not necessarily really a spirit.
Well, Dom, we got to take another break.
Sure.
And you guys are listening to Magic Mind Radio here on the IBC Radio Network. We're here every Monday through Friday. It's 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Stick around. We've got some more to go for you. And we're talking tonight to Dom Valela of Paranormal Investigations of New York City. So be sure and stick and back once again here on Magic Mind Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Kraft. Had a great night tonight. We've been talking with Dom Valela of Paranormal Investigations of New York City. And Dom, it's been great having you with us. For anyone out there who's interested, their website is What is that again?
It's www.paranormal-nyc.com.
Okay. I'm sorry. I couldn't read my own handwriting, which is not the first time. You guys definitely check that out. And there's a lot of good information, too, on there besides just ghosts and things regarding OBEs, near-death experience, and several other things. So it's something that you'll definitely want to check out. I've got to encourage you to do so. And hopefully you'll do it on a regular basis because, Dom, you got a very interesting approach to things.
Thank you.
A healthy skepticism with a little belief mixed into it, or open-mindedness, I should say.
And I've been lucky. I have members in my group that are, you know, are all kind of the same way. I think all of us have, we all have specialties, so it helps the whole group, and it makes us as a whole much better. because we have several people in our group who are more of the, I guess, the spiritual end, or the kind of the psychic intuition, although they will never really even say something is definite. And that's usually like Tony and Heidi are like that. And then more of the Dan, our guy Dan is the type of guy who doesn't want to really believe anything until he sees it. Joe tends to pick up things by feeling also. Neil is the same way as Dan. So we all kind of, we split in two, I mean in three and three, like right in half. Of half of us want to like really see something before we believe it. And the other half, a little bit more open-minded, but still skeptical.
And that's important too, to have a good balance.
I
truly believe that any group that is leans one direction or the other is going to find exactly what they're looking for. And a group that has a mixture is more likely to come up with some real evidence in one direction or the other.
I agree. And you have to have, I mean, I always felt like this, the six of us work very well together. And there's no bickering, no arguing, and we kind of complement each other.
Agree to disagree, in other words. Way. Is that safe? You guys agree to disagree?
Yep.
And that's a good approach to a lot of it, to be honest with you.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, we'll sit there for hours when we're analyzing, you know, and one person will say, oh, this is that. And we're like, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's... Yeah, and then, you know, of course, if we don't all agree, and then we know it's not. You know, I think we kind of feel like we all have to agree. You know, and if anything's going to be put in that one position to be, and that's why I say the child's crying is kind of that one thing that we all listen to, and still kind of the hair on the back of my neck still rises when I hear it. I mean, I have two young children, so when I hear a voice like that...
it tends to go stay in your mind. I know exactly where you're coming from. I've got to thank you again for being with us, Dom. I'll get you to stay on the line. But we've got to go ahead and wrap things up here. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
Okay, thank you so much.
And I've enjoyed it, but I want to get you to stick with me for just a moment.
Okay, I will.
And I've got to thank all our listeners out there for being with us tonight here on Magic Mind Radio. We've been talking with Dom Vallela of Paranormal Investigations of New York City, and you know, we've just basically hit the tip of the iceberg here, and it's been one of those discussions where I think there's a lot more to get into. So hopefully we can get Dom back and we'll have a lot more information for you. I do have to apologize for everyone out there who have tried to access our archive from last night. We had a slight problem with the archives, but Ginger has graciously agreed to come back and be with us